Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Well, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankleberg, and Tim Rogers is joining me today. Happy Monday, Tim.
Thanks, Fred. Same to you.
All right. Well, Tim, we got a response. I shouldn't say a response. We've got a couple of questions, actually, in the last week that relate to what you and I have been talking about in the Speaking of Reliability series. And there were similar questions, but one of them was... they were outsourcing a subsystem of their product to a contract manufacturer that was also going to do the design. And I've heard it phrased as a outsource design and manufacture, ODM model. And what she told me in the question was, we gave them reliability specifications and very detailed. And they converted it to MTBF, which, you know, I don't much care for. And I was glad she didn't care for it either, which is likely going to lead to some confusion or hamper the ability of the supplier to create the product that meets the reliability requirements. And then they took that converted requirement and then propagated it down to their suppliers and to their design team and so on. And so I think when I read into the question, there's really two parts. Is one, what do I do now working with the supplier? And then, you know, what should I do? And then two is, how do you avoid that? So this is, I think it's a bigger question than just reliability specs, but that happens to be where she works, is on the reliability side of the product and the system. And it's kind of the part of the title of this podcast that's got reliability in it. So we can use that as a springboard. Yeah. I mean, have you seen, and I'm sure you've seen this before with suppliers where they have to interpret the specifications and the requirements into their own language to some extent, but
of course,
is there a point when it's too far?
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of the old game of telephone, right? Where you repeat a message to one person, they turn around and repeat that message to a third person who repeats it to a fourth person. And by the time you get to the end of the supply chain, you've completely lost, you know, the meaning and the importance of the original message. So, yeah, this is, of course, increasingly common, particularly with the larger and extended supply chains that people are working with today, where you may not have a lot of expertise in a particular area. And so you look for a supplier who can do both the design and the manufacturing, which, right, you know, it's makes perfect sense. But of course, you're putting a lot of trust in the hands of that supplier. You're entrusting them to understand what the performance characteristics need to be, and then how to interpret that into a production environment. So there's still a lot of responsibility on your part to make sure that your message is getting heard and that what's important to you is being, you know, interpreted correctly. So if you do have specific concerns about reliability, you know, those need to be very clearly communicated to the supplier. That doesn't mean you have to tell them how to do the design. You don't have to get your hands dirty, you know, so to speak, in the design process. But you do have to make sure that the outcomes are very, very well defined, and it's very clear how those are going to be measured. So, Fred, let me go back. This, the person who sent you the question, they ended up with MTBF, but what they wanted was something different. Is that right?
Well, yes. Well, they wanted what the customer, I mean, what their objective was, is a relatively low failure rate over some duration of time.
Right.
And there's an infinite way number of ways to achieve that. And I think that's not in dispute. It's just that when you convert it to a probability over a duration type specification, mm-hmm. when that gets converted to MTBF, it's not equivalent. It comes with the baggage of that single number assumes a constant failure rate.
Right.
Which isn't, and let's say it's a 20-year product, which I think is what this case was. Many of the failure mechanisms will exhibit wear out mechanisms. Mm-hmm. They're also concerned about infant mortality, the early life failures, which is a decreasing failure rate.
Right.
And if the supplier internally converts it to MTBF, it ignores the decreasing failure rates and the increasing failure rates and basically masks them. It also has advantages, and I can understand why suppliers like working with MTBF, is because instead of taking, say, 10 samples and running it for the equivalent of 20 years, they can take 10 samples and run them each for an equivalent of 2 years, mm-hmm. and then bundle those together because of the nature of the memoryless feature of the exponential distribution. Mm-hmm. It really streamlines testing, because if there's every hour of operation has exactly the same chance of failing, it doesn't matter whether I run a unit for 1 hour or 1 unit for 20 years or 10 units for 2 years, I get the same mathematical result. So, but if you have a wear out mechanism, then that completely falls apart. And you really need to run the 10 samples or however many samples for the equivalent of 20 years. So the specification itself is what they were really asking for was, you need to understand the product and the failure mechanisms such that we achieve a low failure rate at over a 20-year operation. And by converting it to MTBF, the likelihood of them designing tests and understanding failure mechanisms when they put on the blinder of it's a constant failure rate really hampers the ability for them to actually achieve the objective.
Right.
And so it's not impossible, but
Fred, I hate to say it, but despite your best efforts, MTBF is still out there. People are still using it, still talking about it. I know this is your campaign and I wish you the best of luck with it, but I guess we shouldn't be surprised if we still run into suppliers who want to try to simplify by you applying that kind of metric. Suppliers going to try to keep things as simple as possible from their standpoint. They're going to mm-hmm. make, in the absence of information, the supplier's going to make assumptions about what you mean, what you're looking for, what kind of reliability level you need in this environment and how that's going to be measured. And I emphasize, in the absence of information, if you don't tell them otherwise, then they're going to default on some kind of simplistic model mm-hmm. when it comes to reliability and how you measure reliability. So this is where you may need to trust the supplier to know what they're doing when it comes to design and when it comes to manufacturing. But you shouldn't trust the supplier to know what they're doing when it comes to the service environment, the field environment that your product is going to go into.
Right.
It's unlikely that they're going to be an expert in that area. Or to say it differently, it's much more likely that you're going to be the expert than they are
right.
in how the product is going to be used and what the service environment is going to look like and what kind of field failures you are most concerned about.
Right.
So that's where you have to make sure that you're educating your supplier. They're going to look at your request and they're going to try to make it fit within their existing experience. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. they're going to say, oh, yeah, we've done a similar kind of product for a different customer. We're going to apply the same kinds of principles, same kind of design principles, maybe the same kind of reliability tests that they've performed for other customers. That's just natural. It's natural for them to want to leverage their existing knowledge and assets. So we shouldn't be surprised when it happens. Again, that's where it's your responsibility as a customer to explain to them what is unique or different or special about this product and what you really care about. It's not realistic to expect that they're going to understand all of that up front.
Yeah, that, you know, I know you're exactly right. It's the, and part of the, a complete set of specifications concerning reliability is in the environmental conditions and the various stresses that the product will see.
Right.
Right. And we need that if we're designing our own product so we can create the evaluations and, mm-hmm. and testing appropriate. It's so I think what the question was about was that I think they provided a decent reliability specifications. It got changed anyway. And, you know, and so I think the only thing I advise her to do is that you need to challenge anywhere that assumption affects the design decisions or the testing or something like that. So if they come up with the simplified test, assuming a constant failure rate, you have to just say, no, how do you know, what is the evidence that it is not a, it has a, doesn't have a wear out mechanism, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So there's the basic stuff of like the risk assessment, the mm-hmm. FMEA type work or test design are various points where the reliability team can monitor, if nothing yeah. else, the supplier.
Yeah. But
I think, and I've run into this, is where you get pushback. I got pushback on from my own management team saying, hey, hands off. Anytime you talk to them, they charge us a change order and, oh. you know, and all this other stuff. And at the end of the day, if we ended up spending a ton of time with the supplier redesigning the product because it was a complete failure. But it was all avoidable if they had thought through the environmental stresses and the yeah. various other parts. But like you said, as they said, oh, it was a power supply. And he said, we designed power supplies custom every day, all day long for all kinds of customers. This is just another power supply. But it didn't work in this application.
Was this a new supplier, Fred, that you hadn't worked with before?
No, it was the big well-known power. I think they used to be Delta. I think mm-hmm. they got bought some years ago. But there's other components like that, like connectors. Right? They custom design these things by the dozens every right. day. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're the expert, like you said, is with your application, with your right. environment, with your stresses.
You know, I would expect problems like this with a new supplier that you haven't worked with before, again, that doesn't have that familiarity with your application. It's a little bit surprising that it happens with a supplier that supposedly has that, but it just goes to show that complacency, you know, can lead to some errors and mistakes as well.
Well, there's that. I think it's also survival. I know this power supply vendor is, because they're designing customizations for, you know, they have a family of power supply that they were a base power supply design, and somebody wants a different ripple current. Somebody wants a different voltage. You know, I want two lines, not three lines. I want this. And so every day they're making modifications for specific customers and they just throw it into the standard suite of verification tests. Because if they had to stop and make a custom sequence of verification, validation testing, or reliability testing, they'd never get a product out. They just would have to, you know, amass a staff to run all these specific tests.
Right.
But I think it crosses the threshold when it's a custom design. It's not like a power supply where instead of, you know, 3 centimeters wide, I need it 2.9 centimeters wide,
right?
You know, which may be a significant change, you know, or not concerning reliability. It's just, I think the risk assessment part is in any of those cases has got to be, all right, how do we know that this design meets our requirements? Is the
right
body of evidence there to support that it works in our environment?
Well, I really like what you said about participating in FMEA or other kinds of design reviews. Again, the customer, which in this case is you, you're the one who is purchasing the design and manufacturing services from your supplier. You have the best understanding of the final application of this product. And so no one else is going to have an appreciation of what the reliability issues are. So you can try to specify performance as much as possible. You can spend a lot of time writing specifications and other documents that you send to the supplier. You can do that. But in addition to that, I strongly recommend that you are involved with the designers at the supplier, with the production engineers at the supplier, again, to help educate them in real time. You want them to be doing design reviews, whether it's FMEA or other kind of risk analysis, and you want to be invited to those meetings. You insist, you should insist to be part of those meetings, yeah, where you can provide that input, again, during those early stages. You also want to be involved in test design. How will this product be tested, you know, the early versions of this product, to verify the design as it goes through the product development life cycle? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Again, I'm thinking about a supplier that does design work. You want to know what their prototyping plan is. You know, you want, in fact, you may even want to receive some of those prototype units. At the very least, you should get test results from the prototypes that they're building along the way. I don't know how often. I know it really depends on the expected duration of the development cycle, but you should insist on at least one prototype that's built that, again, gives you the opportunity to provide some early feedback on whether the design is meeting your reliability needs.
Yeah, I totally agree, Tim. So I think that some of this has to be done in the initial contracting and setting expectations.
Sure.
Some of this is understanding with your own organization and with your supplier where the involvement needs to be so that it works for both.
Exactly.
You know, we don't want to be in there micromanaging it and co-designing it with them, because that's what we're paying them to do.
Right.
But on the other hand, like you said, we bring to the table the unique knowledge. So I think that's a good guideline to work with.
Right. If I could sum it up, it's that you cannot rely only on written documents in order to make sure that you can write specifications, you can write test procedures, you know, you can say, you know, you can put it all in writing, but you have to spend some time with, you know, actually inspecting their work along the way. That's how you're going to know whether your message has been heard and understood about reliability. Just putting it in writing, putting it in a document, that's not enough.
Yeah, totally agree. All right. Well, I think that we'll wrap it up there. It's a nice summary, Tim. Thanks. And hopefully the answers, even if you didn't ask this particular question, it may be appropriate for your world, and hopefully it helps you think through what an appropriate action would be and path forward. But if you have questions, Tim and I and the others on the Speaking of Reliability program would love to hear from you. So, you know, on the reliability.fm site, there's a spot for comments, or you can send us an email or get in touch with us some way or another, and we'll be happy to one, provide you an answer as quick as we can, but also may well make a nice topic for the show. So we'd look forward to that. So we appreciate you joining us today, and we'll sign off. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.